जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर थारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर थारी यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन नंदना यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन नंदना यामन तीरवन चारी यमुन तीर वनचारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर तारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर थारी यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंदना यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंदना यमुन तीर वन चारी यमुन तीर वन चारी माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य अष्टोत्तर सुतश्री भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय निताय गो प्रेमानंदे हरि बोल समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय गवेश दिय संबल देवतीस गवेश दिय संबल देवतीस गवेश दिय संबल देवतीस गवेश श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग की जय ओम नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 15, Description of the Kingdom of God. Text number 4. Word meanings: Deva Deva, O God of the demigods. Jagadhata, O sustainer of the universe. Lokanath Shikamane, O head jewel of all the demigods in other planets. Paresham, of the spiritual world. Uparesham, of the material world. Tvam Yu, Bhutanam, of all living entities. Asi Ar, Bhavavit, knowing the intentions. Deva Deva Jagatatar. Lokanata Shikamane. Paresham Paresham Tvam. Bhutanam Asi Bhavavit. Deva Deva Jagatathar. Lokanata Shikamane. Paresham Paresham Tvam. Bhutanam Asi Bhavavit. Hare Krishna. Translation. O God of the demigods, sustainer of the universe, head jewel of all the demigods and other planets, you know the intentions of all living entities in both the spiritual and material worlds. These are demigods addressing Lord Brahma. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Because Brahma is almost on an equal footing with the personality of Godhead, he is addressed here as the God of the demigods. And because he is the secondary creator of this universe, he is addressed as the sustainer of the universe. He is the head of all the demigods, and therefore he is addressed here as the head jewel of the demigods. It is not difficult for him to understand everything which is happening in both the spiritual and material worlds. He knows everyone's heart and everyone's intentions. Therefore, he was requested to explain this incident. Why was the pregnancy of Diti causing such anxieties all over the universe? Om jnanati mirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshuran militamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So this is the situation explained in the last line here. Diti's pregnancy seems to be causing some problems. The whole universe has become darkened, I think it said. Yeah. Expansion of darkness in all directions. By the force of pregnancy of Diti, the light of the sun and the moon was impaired in all the planets. So then the demigods went to see Lord Brahma. So we have this, all these superlative descriptions here, or addresses to Lord Brahma, Deva, Deva, Jagatata, God of the gods, sustainer of the universe, head jewel. So Prabhupada explains in the purport why he's being addressed like this. So Brahma is, he's in a way, way above the demigods. That's why he's called the God of the demigods, because his position is above Swargaloka. You know, there's Swargaloka, Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, then Brahmaloka. So of course, Lord Brahma is a guna avatar. He's also called a Shakti Avesha avatar because he has the Srishti Shakti. He's empowered by Krishna to create the universe, Srishti. There's three, Srishti, Stiti, and Pralaya. So he has the Srishti Shakti. So not only is a guna avatar, but he's also considered a shaktyavesh avatar. So he oversees the mode of passion in this material world. Obviously he has a very, very big position. I want to look into a little bit more about Lord Brahma. I'm going to read something here. This is from Gopi Puranadana Prabhu's commentary on the Bhagavat Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami, fifth Anucheda, the second subsection, has to do with Lord Brahma. He says, in each created universe, the second form of the Purusha, Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu, exhibits the pastime of lying down to rest on the body of water that covers the bottom half of the universal egg. During his sleep, a lotus stem grows out of his navel, and Brahma, the delegated creator and first manifest Jiva of the universe, takes birth from him. So this we're all familiar with, I think. Brahma first accepts the lotus stem itself as his own body, and is then born a second time on the flower that appears from that stem. Like every other finite soul born into material creation, Brahma accepts both gross and subtle bodies. The lotus stem is Brahma's external body, the Virat, or universal form. So he's the soul of the universal form, the Jiva. This is Gopi Pranadana Prabhu's commentary on Bhagavat Sandarbha, fifth Anucheda. There's some more here. There's other supporting evidence here. The lotus stem is Brahma's external body, the Virat, or universal form, which only adept yogis are able to see. His mental body, which underlies the Virat and is even less perceptible, is called Hiranyagarbha. So this Hiranyagarbha is one of those words you hear maybe and you say, what is that exactly, is Hiranyagarbha? So here we're getting some little bit of insight into it. It's the subtle body of the Virat Purusha, you can say. So then it says, and in his second birth, Brahma's four-headed body, visible to the demigods, is called Karana, the cause of manifest creation. For confirmation of this, see the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 3.8.15 by His Divine Grace, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So I'm not going to read Prabhupada's whole purport. First of all, this is the verse, this is 3.8.15. Into that universal lotus flower, Lord Vishnu personally entered as the Supersoul. So Brahma's the soul, and Lord Vishnu is the Supersoul of the Virat Rupa. And when it was thus impregnated with all the modes of material nature, the personality of Vedic wisdom, whom we call the self-born, was generated. So Prabhupada just kind of summarizes again how Lord Brahma is born. But then at the end he says, let's see. He goes to sleep with Narayan at the time of devastation, and when there is another creation, he is born in this way. From this description, we have the conception of three: the gross Virat form, the subtle Hiranyagarbha, and the material creative force. So this is what Gopi Brahmadhanpur was writing about here, these three different forms. And Lord Brahma is associated with each one of them. So I'm continuing with his commentary, Gopi Prabhu. People without deep spiritual knowledge imagine that the Virat is Lord Vishnu's body, but actually the Supreme Lord never has a material body. The Hiranyagarbha and Virat bodies are in fact produced for the Jiva Brahma, and it is Brahma who assumes possession of them. Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is involved only as the super soul accompanying Brahma in these gross and subtle forms. Thus, the second Vishnu has three upadis, or imaginary identities, while his true identity remains always in a separate fourth category. Yesterday I was listening to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami. One section he's talking about Brahma. And he says, he uses a term, something like the Maya Brahma. We can say Brahma is Maya, he says. Because he's associated with the material world. So this is sort of implied here also, this material, the Virat, or the material world, it's not for Vishnu's pleasure, it's for Brahma. He wants a body, and that's the body he's getting, you know, the whole universe, basically. Where he has these three different bodies, subtle. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on that same verse that's being referred to, 3.8.15. That lotus made of all the planets. So here again, so the lotus, all the planets of the universe are there. Now, I was reading this, I was saying, well, but apparently Brahma didn't see them because he climbed down the lotus trying to figure out where does this thing come from. But maybe they were there in some kind of subtle form that he wasn't able to perceive. But it says here and in other places. So this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, of course, a great authority for us. That lotus made of all the planets called the Vairaja, which at the time of devastation had entered a subtle state, now appeared at the end of devastation in the form of a lotus. So, of course, everything is cyclic. So there's a devastation at the end of Brahma's day and, of course, at the end of Brahma's night. So every morning, Brahma wakes up and he kind of forgets what he's supposed to be doing. In fact, I think maybe this comes up here somewhere. It says, Vishnu as Antaryami entered that lotus. Okay, let me skip this line. Brahma appeared within that lotus. He is called self-born because he has no visible parentage. He was previously merged with Narayana in sleep. When the Lord awoke, Brahma appeared by means of that lotus. There is the gross form of Brahma called Vairaja, the lotus of the planets. There is a subtle form called Hiranyagarbha. There is also four-headed Brahma, the creator, who appeared from the lotus at this time. Thus, there are three forms of Brahma. So this is Bhanuswami's translation. He gives a little footnote here. He says, Rupa Goswami in Laghu Bhagavatamrita gives only two forms of Brahma. Hiranyagarbha is the subtle form made of Mahatattva, is the aggregate of the jivas, and Vairaja is the gross form made of the aggregate of elements with forehead who creates. According to Vishwanath, Vairaja is the aggregate of the elements and planets, and the four-headed Brahma creates. So again, we have these subtle and gross. So another explanation of the Hiranyagarbha is that it's a form of the Mahatattva. And Prabhupada in one place says that the Mahatattva is made up of all the ahankars of the jivas. So Brahma, he's the soul of all the jivas before they're manifest, basically. Before the creation really unfolds and the jivas take their different positions in this material world again, after, of course, they've been merged into the body of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu during the night, but they still have all their desires left over when the destruction took place. And so they come out and they get their different bodies. So that conglomerate of all the jivas, all bound up together, the soul of that is Lord Brahma also, and that's also called Hiranyagarbha. So I wrote myself a little note here when I read this a couple of years ago. I said, this was my understanding. So there are three bodies of Brahma. The three Brahmas are Hiranyagarbha, made of the Mahatattva. He is the aggregate of the jivas. Vairaja Brahma is Brahma as the lotus. In other words, that's his body. It's his body. It's the body of one of the three Brahmas, the lotus flower itself. And it is made of the planets, i.e. the material elements. And then finally, four-headed Brahma who creates. Or a subtle Brahma, a gross Brahma, and a creator Brahma. So these are the three. So it's not spelled out exactly clearly. Of course, Prabhupada does mention that there are three. He says we see this from this verse and this description that he's in the context of it. So here's some other points about Brahma. Let's see, this is from... It says, Shukadeva Goswami said, formerly, prior to the manifestation of the cosmos, Lord Brahma, by meditating on the Virat Rupa, regained his lost consciousness by appeasing the Lord. Thus he was able to rebuild the creation as it was before. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says, so from this we can understand that Lord Brahma forgets. So he's being praised in the verse that we're reading today as so almighty God of gods and so on. But he wakes up in the morning and has to be reminded what he's supposed to be doing. We read that actually earlier in this third canto, how Lord Brahma is praying, please tell me how to do this. I'm supposed to create the universe, but I've forgotten how to do it, so can you remind me? So, I lost my notes. I'm just going to read some things and make some comments. The great personality Brahma, with great attention and concentration of the mind, studied the Vedas three times. So here's something that Lord Brahma did also to get his memory back. He studied the Vedas three times, and after scrutinizingly examining them, he ascertained that attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the highest perfection of religion. Jiva Goswami mentions in the Sundarbhas that when he studied them three times, he did it from different perspectives. And the first time he did it from the Karmakanda perspective. And the second time he did it from the Jnanakanda perspective. And the third time he did it from the Bhakti perspective. And then he realized the Bhakti perspective was the best one. And the conclusion of all the Vedas is that we have to be devotees. We have to serve the Supreme Personality of God. And what does he say? Attraction. He ascertained that attraction for the Supreme Personality of God, it is the highest perfection of religion. So this is Shukadev speaking. My dear king, Brahma the firstborn, on being questioned by Narada, exactly apprised him on this subject as it was directly spoken by the Lord to his own son, who was impregnated with Vedic knowledge from his very birth. So I put these verses here to remind myself of different points. Brahma appears in the Bhagavatam. So of course we all know that Krishna spoke the Chatushloki Bhagavatam in four verses to Lord Brahma. So then what did Lord Brahma do? Lord Brahma spoke the same philosophy, same tattva he spoke to Narada. And that comes up in the second canto. Narada asks him, he says, it seems like you're independent in what you do. You're so powerful. You seem like God, but then I see that you're praying. So what's that about? So Lord Brahma says, yes, people are mistaken when they think that I'm supreme, but I'm empowered by him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's a couple of chapters, I think it's chapters 8 and 9, I think it is, of the second canto. Yeah, chapter 7 is the incarnation. Oh no, it comes before that. Actually, it comes before that because the incarnations are the end of what? So those two chapters then, 6 and 7, is Lord Brahma speaking to Narada. What Suta Goswami explains at the end of the 12th canto is a summary of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a second recitation. Brahma received it from Krishna, and then he spoke it to Narada. Then, of course, later, Narada spoke it to Vyas, and Vyas spoke it to Shukadev Goswami, and Shukadev, of course, he spoke it to Parikshit, and Suta Goswami was there. Now he's speaking it to the sages of Naimisharanya. So we have all these, this parampara going on here. So that's in the second canto. Let's see. Yeah, he says, on being questioned by Narada, Brahma exactly apprised him on this subject as it was directly spoken by the Lord to his own son, Brahma, who was impregnated with Vedic knowledge from his very birth. Then a little, this is a little later, this is in the ninth chapter, second canto. The Personality of Godhead, so we're at the 15th chapter now. So this is back in the ninth chapter. This is ninth chapter, second canto. So the ninth chapter is where the Chatushloki appears. So this is some introduction to it. The Personality of Godhead, being thus very much satisfied by the penance of Lord Brahma. So Brahma, you know, he heard this occult vibration, as Prabhupada refers to it. Occult means you don't know where it's coming from, basically. So he heard this sound, tapa. And Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath, I think, too, also, they explained that the grammar of this, it doesn't just mean penance. It means do penance. It's in the potential or imperative mood. It's actually an order. Tapa means do tapa. So he understood. Someone's telling me to do tapa. And he understood that that must be God speaking to me. He had this insight. Too often we hear the word of God, but we don't believe it's coming from God. But he accepted, this is God speaking to me. This is actually the voice of God. And he took it seriously, and he performed tapasya. Tapasya, we tend to think of it maybe of doing some hardship, like the yogis do when they go to Himalayas and sit on an iceberg or whatever, freezing cold. And so we think of tapa maybe like that. But the Jiva Goswami says that tapa means austerity, austerity in the sense of fixed concentration. That's the essence of tapasya, fixing yourself. So it's meditation, really. In some ways, it's a synonym for meditation. Because that's, you once say, that's one way that you can say that's the hardest thing, right? We experience ourselves, how hard it is to just fix our mind on something. We're chanting and it's just the mind is going everywhere. So this is tapasya. So that's what Brahma did. That was his tapasya, to fix his mind in meditation. Let's see. The personality of Godhead, being thus very much satisfied with the penance of Lord Brahma, was pleased to manifest his personal abode, Vaikuntha, the supreme planet above all others. This transcendental abode of the Lord is adored by all self-realized persons, freed from all kinds of miseries and fear of illusory existence. So then, of course, so he showed him Vaikuntha, and then he spoke to him the nutshell verses, the Chaturshloki, the Bhagavatam. And it says, thereupon the supplementary Vedic literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, which was described by the personality of Godhead and which contains 10 characteristics, was told with satisfaction by the father, Brahma, to his son, Narada. So that's what I was referring to. So he heard it. Brahma heard it, and then he spoke to Narada. Now there's an interesting twist to all of this. We tend to think, and it is, appears prima facie, which means on face of it, in the Bhagavatam, that Krishna, it's Lord Vishnu who's speaking to Lord Brahma. But Jiva Goswami, as he often does in the Sandarbhas, he takes a different position, and he proves what he's got to say. When he has an opinion, he has strong supporting evidence for it. So Jiva Goswami says, actually it's Lord Krishna who spoke the Bhagavatam to Lord Brahma. And he gives, this is in the Krishna Sandarbha. You know, the way Jiva Goswami lays out the Sandarbhas, he starts, of course, with Tattva Sandarbha, establishing the Bhagavatam as our main pramana, where we get our proof of what is reality. And then he has the Bhagavat Sandarbha, which, of course, is about Bhagavan, but in a kind of generic way. He doesn't identify. It's like explaining who God is, but not saying who he is exactly. What he is, but not who he is. So then Paramatma Siddharva is about Paramatma, which is about, because Bhagavan is Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. He's in the spiritual world. He stays there, does what he does. But the Paramatma Siddharva means Krishna's incarnations in this material world, the Vishnus, especially the Purusha avatars. So he has a Sandarbha for each of them because he makes a distinction. This is one of Jiva Goswami's great contributions to Vaishnava philosophy, where he makes this somewhat of a distinction between God in the spiritual world and God when he appears in this material world in different aspects and different the ways that they act. So there you have the, so the fourth, you have the Paramatma Sandarbha. So then the next one is Krishna Sandarbha. So he's already explained Bhagavan. Now he's going to explain who that Bhagavan is exactly. So the whole Krishna Sandarbha is about Krishna specifically. Different aspects, actually. There's a lot of different subsections in the book. So in the Krishna Sandarbha, the Anucheta 64 is where Jiva Goswami makes the point that it's Krishna who spoke the Bhagavatam. So this is some of the evidence that he gives. He says, first of all, let's see, wait a minute. One of the interesting, oh, I know what it is, because he's quoting his verse. It says, Lord Brahma saw in the Vaikuntha planets the personality of Godhead, who is the Lord of the entire devotee community. Now this is Srila Prabhupada's translation for the phrase Satvatam Patim. So you may know this phrase, Satvatam Patim, it means Lord of the Satvatas. So Satvatas can mean just devotees, like Sat, and devotees are sometimes called Sat or Satam. So Satvatam Patim can just mean the Lord of the devotees in general. But Jiva Goswami says, no, actually he's talking about the Vrishni dynasty, because the Vrishni dynasty is called the Satvatas. And he quotes another verse to support that. That verse is, oh, I didn't put the, here. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.20. It's like he's saying, if you don't believe that this is Satvatthama is actually talking about the Yadu dynasty, then here's a verse, and he quotes the, it ends, Patir Gatish Chandaka Vrishni Satvatam. May Lord Krishna, who is the worshipable Lord of all devotees, so again, Prabhupada translates it as the Lord of all devotees, the protector and glory of all kings like Andaka and the Vrishni of the Yadu dynasty. So Jiva Goswami quotes this verse and says, actually, Satvatthama here definitely means the Yadu dynasty, because we're talking about Krishna, and in other words, Satvatthama Patim can legitimately be understood to be the Yadus, which means Krishna. So when it says that the Satvatthama Patim spoke to Lord Brahma, it means Krishna. This is one of his arguments, because this phrase can be taken like that. Now, then he also quotes the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. Of course, of the Upanishad, this is one our acharyas like to quote because, well, Gopal Tapani, it's about Gopal, it's about Krishna, it's directly about Krishna. It's probably not one of the most popular or familiar among those who study the Upanishad because, of course, who's studying them these days? It's mostly Mayavadis. That is, they will want to diminish the importance of the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. But for us, it's very important. In the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, well, here's a verse from it. This is the first part, text 24. A person aspiring for liberation should take shelter of the Supreme Deva, who illumines the self and the intellect, who brought forth Brahma at the beginning of creation, and who, as Sri Krishna, imparted knowledge unto him. So also, Lord Brahma says, the Supreme Purusha, this is also in the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, the Supreme Purusha appeared before me as a cowherd boy. Now, as I read this, I tend to think, well, yeah, we have the whole Brahma Samhita, we're reciting part of it every day. In the context of that, we get Krishna there, Govinda. But Jiva Goswami is saying that these references to Krishna appearing as a cowherd boy to Brahma is also in the context of him teaching him, giving him, imparting to him the four nutshell verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So here's just a few other little things. It says, because Brahma is the form of the aggregate of jivas, okay, so this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So again, he's making this point, 3.9.24 commentary. Because Brahma is the form of the aggregate of jivas, the presiding deity of buddhi tattva, he is called Vijnana Shakti. So he's also the presiding deity of buddhi, intelligence. The Mahatattva is described also as the sum total of, or the original cosmic intelligence. The Mahatattva is sometimes described like that. So let me look at this. I'm not sure what this is about. Oh my Lord, the unborn, you have, oh, I know what this is. You have shaken hands with me just as a friend does with a friend, as if in equal position. So I think you know what I'm talking about here, right? Lord Brahma is saying this to the Lord. You shook hands with me, because that's described earlier, that the Lord shook Brahma's hand. He said, I shall be engaged in the creation of different types of living entities, and I shall be occupied in your service. I shall have no perturbation, but I pray that this may not give rise to pride as if I were the Supreme. So this is what Srila Prabhupada says there in his purport, the beginning of his purport for 2.9.30. Lord Brahma is definitely situated in the humor of friendship with the Lord. So that's not a small thing. Every living being is eternally related with the personality of Godhead in one of five different transcendental humors, namely Shanta, Dasya, Sukya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. We have already discussed these five kinds of humors in relationship with the personality of Godhead. It is clearly exhibited herein that Lord Brahma is related to the personality of Godhead in that transcendental humor of friendship. So So Brahma, of course, because that's another whole thing. Brahma is so important in the Bhagavatam. Of course, in the 13th chapter of the 10th canto, we had the Brahma Vimohan Leela. And, you know, in some ways, we think, oh, that's bad, that Brahma, he tried to challenge Krishna in a certain way. But it turned out pretty good for Lord Brahma, actually. He was able to get direct darshan of the Lord, and he was able to see this amazing display that Krishna did with all the Vishnus coming out of the cowherd boys. He showed all the cowherd boys are me as Lord Vishnu. And Brahma's foreheads were spinning. It's like, whoa, look at this. This is amazing. And then, of course, Brahma, he offered these beautiful prayers, so many important verses in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. Really wonderful. So Brahma's is so glorious. Of course, he's the head of our sampradaya. So he, he's certainly in a very exalted position. Okay, now here's a completely different point. I'll just end with this. Just because to me it's curious. I read this in the 5th canto. I'll just read the verse. In the middle of the summit of Meru, so Mount Meru, you know Mount Meru is the big mountain in the middle of Bhumandala. So it says, in the middle of the summit of Meru is the township of Lord Brahma. Each of its four sides is calculated to extend 10 million yojanas, 80 million miles. It is made entirely of gold, and therefore learned scholars and sages call it Shatakombi. So this is not actually Brahma Loka that we're talking about here. Brahma Loka is way, way, way up there. This is some place where Brahma goes sometimes. So it seems like one reason he goes there is he has meetings with the demigods. Just like now, the demigods are approaching him. So there's some implication that maybe they don't go all the way to Brahma Loka. They go to his place. He may be in both places at the same time, right? I mean, all these the inconceivable things happen all the time in the Bhagavatam. So, because it's also said, let's see, did I spread that here? Here's an example. This is in the 8th canto. The demigods are having trouble again, fighting with the demons. So they go to Lord Brahma. Lord Indra, Varuna, and the other demigods, seeing their lives in such a state, consulted among themselves, but they could not find any solution. Then all the demigods assembled went together to the peak of Sumeru Mountain. There in the assembly of Brahma, they fell down to offer Lord Brahma their obeisances, and then they informed him of all the incidents that had taken place. So they went there. Actually, I think, is this the same? This is an earlier instance. Brahma went took the demigods to see the Lord. Another problem was, this is leading into the churning of the milk ocean. But it says that when they got there into the Lord's presence, it says the vision of all the demigods was blocked by the Lord's effulgence. Thus they could see neither the sky, the directions, the land, nor even themselves, what to speak of seeing the Lord who was present before them. But it said that Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma could see him. And then later it says, actually it's in the same section, when the Lord was thus offered prayers by the demigods headed by Lord Brahma, he understood the purpose. So it says, the demigod, he replied to the Lord, who all stood there attentively with folded hands. So now, then you get the sense that maybe their vision cleared up and they were ultimately able to see him. And then I just wanted to make also this one point, that it says the demigods, they meet Brahma there. Because Brahma is there, he has his place on top of Mount Sumeru. And then the eight Dikpals, those are special demigods. There are eight main demigods. One of them is Indra. And they're in charge of the eight directions, which means northeast, southwest, northeast, southeast, and so on. Those are the eight directions. Actually, there are 10 directions, because there's up, the zenith and the nadir, the up and below. And Brahma's on the upper one, or Vishnu. Anyway, it's described in different places. So the demigods, they also have their... Sometimes I know devotees, they joke, they say, like in India, when it's really hot, the rich people, they go to their hill station, where it's cooler in the hills. So this is the demigod's hill station, the Mount Sumeru, they go. When things get hot, with the demons, they go take refuge and go see Lord Brahma there. So this is Brahma. Again, Brahma's position is so exalted, he's so above them. There's another little, I'll just make this one little anecdote. After the whole fiasco of the Daksha Yajna, so of course, Lord Shiva was offended when all this took place, and he was offended by the demigods, actually, because it was like his people, the demigods were fighting against Lord Shiva's people. And of course, in that whole sacrifice, Sita Devi self-immolated, burned herself up. So I guess bad things were happening, so the demigods went to Lord Brahma and said, what should we do? And Lord Brahma, first thing he said, you can't think anything good is going to happen if you offend Lord Shiva. That's not going to work. So the only thing you can do is go ask for his forgiveness. So there's a whole description how Lord Brahma and all the demigods, they go. It's interesting because there's a description there of Kailas, and it goes on quite a bit, over and over. You know, it's like all this intricate description. I'm thinking, why do we need to hear all this about Mount Kailas? But anyway, it's there. So then when they get there, Lord Brahma says, you know, I brought the demigods, they're sorry. And he said, oh, it's all right. I know, the demigods, they're just childish anyway. It doesn't bother me what they do. So he just sloughed it off. Don't worry about it. It's okay. So in the end, everything, of course, turned out well. And Lord Brahma gave Lord Shiva gave different benedictions to them and so on. So anyway, this is just another example to show how Lord Brahma is their leader. You know, when they get in trouble, they go to Lord Brahma and ask him to bail them out, and which he does. And he's, of course, we're hearing how he's so powerful. He has that, I think it's in Narada when he's glorifying him, right? He says, you know the universe like somebody knows a walnut in the palm of their hand. So Brahma, even here it says he knows everyone's heart and everyone's intentions. So he's watching. He knows if you've been bad or good. So be good for goodness sake, right? That's Lord Brahma. Actually, Brahma, sometimes I think in the Judeo-Christian religion, who are they worshiping exactly? Brahma is in some ways fits the bill for the kind of God that they worship. He's so powerful. He's the creator, right? He's the creator. He puts it all together. So he's, in one sense, of course, and he's empowered by the Supreme Personality of God to do all of this. Okay, I'll stop here. Let me just read the translation. O God of the demigods, sustainer of the universe, head jewel of all the demigods and other planets, you know the intentions of all living entities in both the spiritual and material worlds. The shocking part here is also the spiritual world. That's pretty amazing. Prabhupada doesn't elaborate on what that might mean. And if it's every living entity there, he knows what's going on in the minds of the gopis. And it's like, well, woo! It's quite something. Actually, we know Lord Brahma in Chaitanya Lila's Haridas Thakur, right? So you just imagine that, right? Haridas Thakur. It's like, woo! Okay, Prandavinda Prabhu.
When Mother Yashoda saw universal form in the mouth of Krishna, is that the material elements intermingle with the Satchidananda body? Or it has a display like a movie or something?
Actually, Lord Brahma says they're in his belly. They were in Krishna's belly, not in his mouth. They were actually in his belly. So she saw. But I mean, what she saw is just completely inconceivable. But Krishna, he can do anything with the material energy. He can put it in, he can put it out, he can extinguish it. Actually, when Lord Chaitanya was talking to Vasudev Dutt, he wanted to take everyone's karma. He says, I can get rid of the whole thing. He says, Krishna, yeah. Krishna can get rid of the whole thing if he wants to. So, you know, to him it's nothing. It's an insignificant part of his energy, and he can manipulate it as he likes in inconceivable ways. Actually, this comes up in the third canto, the discussion between Vidura and Maitreya. We shouldn't, by all accounts, according to our constitution, we jivas shouldn't fall into maya. We're more powerful than that. But by Krishna's achintya shakti, somehow he makes it happen. He makes the impossible happen, basically. Because how can you forget your swarup? You can't. You shouldn't be able to, really. But because Krishna is manipulating, he can manipulate his energy. The material energy is also his energy. Then he can accomplish the impossible. Yes, Maharaj.
Is he responsible
then? Huh? You can blame him and see what happens.
Yeah, just won't give the whole anecdote, but a little piece of an anecdote about sometimes the confusion of Lord Brahma with God himself. And we had a place in Bogota, Colombia, and called Chapinero Alto. And we had some Mormons came. So I said, yeah, all right, you can come up to my office. And it was an interesting encounter. And we had, you know, I tried to explain something about theology, Vaishnava theology. And at the end of the exchange, I was suggesting that the God that they are worshiping seems to fit the profile of what we understand as Lord Brahma, who was like the creator. And they were very thoughtful, and they agreed. They said, yeah, that sounds pretty reasonable. Another is an appreciation, talking about theology. It's absolutely incredible. We hear about Prabhupada gave us matchless gifts. That was even the name of the first temple, 26 Second Avenue. And the amazing expansion of what's given, little tiny hints in other religions, so-called other religions. And so we get the God created the 7 days, boom, 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 and then he had to rest. He got tired, like as if he were like Hercules or something. And not to make fun of it, it's like a seed of what we get in all the fluorescence of the Bhagavatam. They have these 7 days, and what you were this section of the Bhagavatam, and you were elaborating on it. It's just so much more intricate, and it actually sounds more plausible because it's scientific. It has so much detail, so much logic to it. So it's just really we should be thankful to Srila Prabhupada for so many reasons. But one is this amazing, matchless gift of his books, and of course, including a tremendous contrast between the detail that we get about creation as compared to the first day God said, let there be light, and then something else, and it's just so much, it's more believable in the Bhagavatam because it's scientific and so detailed. It's not just some pronouncement, you know, first day light and second day whatever it was. So I don't know, does that sound reasonable?
Yeah.
Sometimes I make comments and I want to convert them into questions. So I made that comment and I'm just asking you as a question makes any sense.
One reason there's so much about the creation in the Bhagavatam is because we're here in the creation in this material world. So we're interested in God in that respect. I mean, basically that's what you see in other religions. They think God doesn't have anything else to do but think about us and deal with us. But sure, we have this whole other side. And you can see again how Jiva Goswami has separated the Paramatma Sandarbha and Bhagavat Sandarbha and Krishna Sandarbha. In other words, Krishna is in that whole other realm which nobody knows anything about. So we have all of that. But because generally conditioned souls, they're interested in what goes on here.
and what God is doing, and they're thinking all his attention is on me. He doesn't have anything else to do but think about what I'm doing.
Right? On that same point, there's a statement that it's appropriate to study the aspect of reality or creation that we ourselves are under its auspices, that we're controlled by, which in this case, of course, we're trying to emerge from that, but in general, it's the material energy. So it does, it's important, and Ishopanishad touches on that too. It's important to study the material energy. Hare Krishna.
Yeah, that's part of Sambandha Gyan. Unless you get that down, then the Abhideya becomes difficult.
Hare Bol. So the Yarus, they're coming from the lineage of King Satvata. I think there was the Yarus, the Bhojas, the Andakas, and they had different kings that they were coming down.
Yeah.
So the Yarus were coming from Satvata, the King Satvata. Another point, Satvata. So, another point you were saying, but Brahma is the aggregate of all the jivas. I mean, that doesn't really sound like literal. I mean, it's just like some personality was saying, he's the sum total of all the demigods.
There's these two terms, samashti jiva and avyashti jiva. So samashti jiva means when they're all kind of bunched up together. And so he's the soul of that conglomerate before it's manifest and comes out and spread all over the universe. Navyashti jiva means, each jiva in the body. So we have this microcosm and macrocosm thing going on. So Brahma's an extraordinary personality. We could say he's almost like God. Even if you read of course this is Aranyakashipu, but when he's glorifying, when Lord Brahma appears before him, all his prayer, it sounds like he's worshiping Krishna or Lord Vishnu, all the prayers that he offers. In fact, Prabhupada says in the purport, that these prayers are actually meant for Vishnu, but Hiranyakashipu is offering them to Brahma because I guess he wants to flatter him because he wants some benediction. But when you read them, you think, wow, why is this? Of course, but it's Hiranyakashipu, so he's offering prayers maybe a little disingenuous.
One other quick point. Sometimes I also... You say the word Vairaj, but sometimes I hear other people say Viraj. I don't know if you know.
Well, I didn't. I'm sorry.
Some difference.
Some pronunciation of
Vairaj and Viraj.
Oh, Vairaja. Yeah, that's the way it's written here. Vairaja. V-A-I-R, long A-J-A. Vairaja. Okay, time to stop.
I just want to clarify that. Three form, Vairaja is the material elements, together is Brahma, and then Hiranyagarbha is total jiva, together is Brahma, and then four-headed Brahma, like individual out of those two other forms.
Well, one thing is, it seems that Rupa Goswami and Vishwanath don't explain it exactly in the same way. This is, I'll read Brahmaswami's footnote again. He says, first he says, Rupa Goswami gives two Brahmas. Hiranyagarbha is the subtle form made of Mahatattva, is the aggregate of the jivas. Now, I don't know, there's something wrong with the grammar here. So anyway, this is the way it's written. Hiranyagarbha is the subtle form made of Mahatattva, is aggregate of the jivas, and Vairaja is the gross form made of the aggregate of elements with four heads who creates. Needs a little editing, but you have to understand it before you can edit it. According to Vishwanath, the Vairaja is the aggregate of the elements and planets, and the four-headed Brahma creates. So that's it. That's the way he defines it. He sees it. He says, Vishwanath says that the Vairaja is the aggregate of the elements and planets. Now that may be from that commentary of Vishwanath that I read. Does he have the phrase here? Yeah, he says... There is the gross form of Brahma called Vairaja. Now, this is something in parentheses here, and I don't know if this was inserted by Bhanuswami. says there is the gross form of Brahma called Vairaja, and in parentheses, the lotus of the planets. There is a subtle form called Hiranyagarbha, and then there's the four-headed Brahma. So if you have the Vishwanath's commentary, you can look this up, his commentary to 3.8.15. All right, let's really end. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.